I remember junior high. It was one of the best times in my life. I know, crazy, right? You all remember junior high. I remember going to church and being a part of the youth group, singing songs and getting excited about God. I know that sounds really weird for a junior high student, but that's what I did. I'd go to youth group, and there was this guy there named Craig. Craig was the youth pastor, and Craig had a long rat tail and a shaved head, and Craig liked metal. Not the steel sort of stuff. That style of music. Heavier, louder, faster, the better. And he loved the really heavy metal. The stuff that growls, that everybody, including my parents, hated every second of. Except for me, I loved that stuff. I found my place in church when I met Craig. I found my place with God when I found the youth group. Literally shoved into the room by my mother. I loved junior high. Because I found my people. I found my tribe. And it was great. But memory and nostalgia are different than history, right? That's why you all laughed when I said junior high was so great for me. Because you have memories, and you understand history, and you understand just how painful and traumatic junior high can be, especially if you were those kids that were picked on. You see, I look back on junior high with nostalgia because I loved what happened at church. I did not love what happened with my soccer team. I did not love what happened at school. I didn't even like who I was when I was home. But I loved church. And when I look at junior high, I look back through the lens of nostalgia, not the lens of history. And I would love to go back to junior high at church. But if I went back to junior high, I would have to take all of the rest with me, right? And so when I use the phrase, the good old days, those may take you back to a time in your history. Our culture generally, as Americans, the good old days are the 1950s. And for some of you, that may have not been good old days. You may not even remember those days. But some of you do. Some of you remember being able to play outside with your friends and not having to worry about people coming and stealing you. Some of you may remember when Disneyland opened. Some of you may remember when desegregation of schools was taking place. Some of you may think of those as good memories. But history says otherwise. You see, we look at the 1950s as a culture in America as the good old days because we want to see the things we liked about the 1950s. We like the invention of television, especially color television, as it became more and more prominent later on. We like the idea of the 1950s, but we don't remember what was really going on back then. Some of you may. Some of you may remember that though the schools were beginning to be desegregated and it was ruled unconstitutional to segregate schools, that everything else in society was still segregated. And that was not okay. Some of you may have friends or family members who identify as lesbian or gay. In the 1950s, nobody came out. And if you did, you were institutionalized. Because prior to 1973, to be gay or lesbian was to be considered insane. Many of you women grew up, went to school. Some of you went to college. Some of you had great careers. And whether it was in the 1950s or today, you still probably didn't make the same as a man doing the same job. The 1950s were even worse in that proportion. Women were expected to stay home, take care of the kids. Sure, they were allowed to go and get an education, but less than 1% of all women went to college in the 1950s. History tells a different story than nostalgia, doesn't it? When I look at our scripture passages from today, and I look at Moses and what he did leading the Israelites in the wilderness, what he endured a lot of nostalgia, didn't he? In Exodus, before they've even gotten the Ten Commandments, let's set that context. Israel has walked out of Egypt full of gold and plunder and everything else because Egypt couldn't wait to get rid of them. They got to the Red Sea. And whether you translate it as the Reed Sea and it's like a foot of water or it really is a deep, deep Red Sea, Israel walked through on dry ground. And here's the big miracle. If you translate it as the Reed Sea and it's only a foot of water, somehow God drowned an entire army. God delivered Israel from Egypt, from slavery in Egypt. And before they get to Mount Sinai, they're complaining to God. They're complaining to Moses. We're thirsty. In Egypt, we had plenty of water. Everything was good in Egypt. Why are you taking us to this place? You should have just let us die. We were better off as slaves. This is what the people are saying to Moses before they've got the Ten Commandments and after they've been delivered from Egypt. Let's fast forward 2 more years of wandering in the desert, going back to Sinai and wandering some more and going back to Sinai. Israel is leaving Sinai after 2 years of wandering in the desert. And what are they doing? They're still complaining. Egypt was so much better than this. This is horrible. Moses, do you realize that in Egypt we had fancy food? With you, all we have is manna. Every day, morning, noon, and evening, manna. Tastes like bread with oil. Oh boy. We want some meat, Moses. Give us something good to eat. Something different, something tasty. Something scrumptious. 2 years of whining and complaining like children on a road trip. My kids are great on a road trip, by the way. But some children are not, and some grown-ups are not. Really? Fast food again? Okay. And what's Moses' response? To these people he's been leading around that God has given him a task to lead, to move from slavery in Egypt into the promised land, Moses gets fed up. And he goes to God and complains. He does a better job than I probably would have. I probably would have turned to those elders and said, "You know what? You prayed to be delivered from Egypt. You cried out to God and said, 'Save us.' And when Pharaoh didn't give you any straw to make bricks, you cried even more. And all God did was answer your prayers." But no, not Moses. Moses goes to God and says, "God, why did you give me these people? All they can do is look behind them and say things were better back then. They have no vision for a future. They have no vision for the land that you have promised to them. Sure, things aren't great now, But there will be. You know what, God? If this is how you're going to let, how these people are going to keep treating me, and you want me to keep leading them, just kill me now. That's an entirely different sermon for everyone who's been a leader somewhere, right? We've all faced that. But I want to talk about the nostalgia of Israel for a little while. I want to talk about what it means for us to be the people of God and to still be like Israel. To long for the days when the churches were full of people and the pews were comfortable because our backs weren't sore. To long for the days when the choir was huge and there was an amazing pipe organ. Not in this church, but some church. Probably your church up north before you migrated to Florida. We all long for different days, don't we? But sometimes our holding on to that past keeps us from looking forward into what God might be calling us to do in the future. For who God is transforming us, changing us to be. Sometimes we are like children, walking like this, looking at the thing we really wish we used to be able to could maybe do again, and hoping that the past will become the future, and we don't see what's right in front of us. We don't see the land flowing with milk and honey. Because nostalgia has stolen our future. You know, friends, I said junior high was one of my favorite times. But if I'm honest, it was really rough. My soccer team had been merged with another soccer team. And for the first time in my years as a soccer player, I had to listen to a new coach. I actually had to try out for the team to see if I would even make the team that I'd been playing for the previous 8 years. It was rough and scary. I made the team. But that didn't mean I wasn't scared. I was a teenage boy in junior high. And if any of you have had sons that have gone through puberty, I was everything bad about puberty for men. Rage and all sorts of craziness. I put holes in the wall. It was bad. I slapped my mother. I was not kind. Looking back, history tells a story about who I was, where nostalgia doesn't. And I think every one of us can identify a little bit with what's going on with Israel. Wandering in the wilderness, experiencing, let's just say, discomfort. Right? We can all connect with the idea that God has taken us from a place and invited us to be in a different place. And in the process of moving in those between those two places, things get uncomfortable, right? Whether it's learning a new skill, entertaining the doctor's request for a new diet, learning to exercise, picking up the Bible and seeing these words that don't make any sense in English because they're written in Greek or Hebrew. Praying out loud for the first time. Meeting with a group of people to pray. The list is endless, right? Because God calls us out of the place where we were and leads us into a new place that is closer to Him. And it's uncomfortable in this place here in the middle when we're not yet there, but also no longer in our comfort zone. This is the story of who we are as a people. Humans like to look back and imagine that life was better at some predetermined time up in the front. We remember days of health and vigor and wish to go back. But we don't remember everything. As the people of God, we need to remember rightly. Because there's a reason we left the place we were and are journeying towards the place we are not yet. God has called us to be better, to do better, to resist injustice, to be His hands and feet in this world. That's the journey of the church. But we're people. And we like to look back and go back. I'm going to read to you one of my favorite proverbs. And it could be because I was raised with dogs. But it makes so much sense with this context. This is Proverbs chapter 26, verse 11. Like a dog that returns to its vomit, so a fool repeats foolish mistakes. The fool goes back to the place they left and thinks it was better than the place God is taking them. Brothers and sisters, we're the church. Let's not be foolish. Let's continue to walk with God into the new places where God is leading us. Places full of milk and honey. Places where we can connect with God in more real and deeper ways. Amen.